Hi, I'm Sabrina Soto. I believe the best conversations are with friends who are really able to open themselves up and share their lives, both the good parts and the bad. You're going to be listening to some of those candid conversations and hopefully gaining some insight to help you redesign your life from the inside out. Hey guys, I am back with the podcast. I'm so excited for a new year, new guests. A few weeks ago, I asked you what you wanted me to cover, what topics you wanted me to go over, and a lot of you said that you wanted to talk about narcissism. So I invited my friend Jill Wise. She is a narcissist abuse recovery coach. She has a YouTube channel, Enlightened Target, and if you've seen it, you know she has great nuggets of information. So I invited her in to have a really great conversation about narcissists and how to recover from these sort of relationships. So let's get started. Jill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. So Jill, you and I were connected because unfortunately I was in my own situation with a potential narcissist in my life, and you really helped me navigate through that. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
And when every time I go on social media and I ask people what sort of podcasts they want me to do, what topics they want me to cover, always the majority of people want me to talk about narcissists. And I know it's a buzzword. And every time somebody breaks up with someone, they're like, my ex is a narcissist. And I know that's not the case because not everyone is. But I feel like there are a lot of people that have questions about potential narcissists in their lives. And I asked the question of what topics people wanted me to cover with you. And I don't think I've ever gotten this many answers to that question. So I really want to sort of go through those because I think it was sort of the questions that I wanted to ask you. But first off, and a lot of my friends who have dealt with potential narcissists, and I always say potential because, you know, they weren't diagnosed, wonder if they're narcissists themselves. And it's something that I think I remember asking you because, and I hate to even admit this because I sound silly, but I didn't really know what narcissism was until a few years ago because I was dealing with a very toxic relationship and a very toxic person. And it sort of kept being brought up in my situation. And because of that, is it normal for someone who's in a unhealthy situation with a potential narcissist to feel like they are responsible, that maybe they are the toxic person?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I'd probably be concerned if after going through something like that, if we didn't question whether we were or not. But the fact that you question it in and of itself is confirmation that you are not a narcissist, because narcissists don't self-reflect, and they certainly don't take accountability for the things that they do. So even if a narcissist was to self-reflect and say, you know, am I a narcissist? Even if they determined that they were, when we're talking about people with narcissistic personality disorder, malignant narcissism, sociopathy, or psychopathy, these people don't care. So we're talking about not a person who doesn't know right from wrong. They do know right from wrong. They just don't have the capacity to care.
But then there are some people that are in your life and that people are dealing with that are potential narcissists, that they act like they care. They act like they're empathetic. So how do you determine that?
Well, they can act like that, but if you watch them closely enough, patterns of behavior, their words and their actions will not align.
Right.
So if you know, when I talk to people about narcissism, if you think somebody in your life is a narcissist, no longer judge them by the words that come out of their mouth. Look at their actions and make sure that their actions and their words are in alignment, because if they're not, that's a huge red flag.
A lot of people told me to ask you, and I'm glad that I'm in a great relationship now, but if they're dating, like, what are the telltale signs in the beginning that you may be dealing with a narcissist so that you don't sort of get into and wasting your time?
Sure, sure. Well, number one, they like to move fast. So there's going to be, and they do something in the beginning called love bombing. So they're going to kind of go overboard with the flattery and wanting to spend time with us, manipulating our time. A lot of times they want to move so fast that they actually even want to move in together relatively soon. So that, number one, and love bombing are probably the two biggest red flags in the beginning.
But love bombing, how do you know the difference between love bombing and someone who is, because, you know, we have all been in that beginning honeymoon stage that you're just, you want to spend all your time with that person. And how do you know the difference between love bombing and someone being genuinely just excited to get to know you?
Well, you'll feel it. You will feel, it won't feel genuine. It will, and it's going to feel, rushed. Normal people who are engaging in a relationship, for the most part, are going to take their time getting to know somebody, and they're not going to try and really rush this relationship to such a degree that there will be a part of you saying, you know, some intuitive thought saying, wait a second, something, this doesn't feel right. This is moving too fast. They will say, I love you at an inappropriate time in the relationship. It will just be way, way, way too fast. But the other thing that you want to certainly be watching out for is something called 3 E's. So you're looking for someone who displays patterns of behavior that show a lack of empathy, entitlement, and exploitative behavior. And you will, anytime you see those three, lack of empathy being number one, but anytime you see those, that you need to sit up straight and really look at what's going on around you.
Yes. And for anyone listening who's sort of in that situation, I can tell you just personally with my own history, there were times in the situation that I was in that I knew there were like these, your instinct kind of tells you, huh, something's not right there. And if you were to ask that person, they would have never thought that I ever had second guessed it, but in my heart, I knew something was up. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I'd love to talk about, because there is this stereotype that if you're in a situation with a narcissist and you're being mentally abused, that you must be weak. And I can tell you, I mean, if you've even asked my friends that have known me since I was 10, I'm a pretty type A, strong Cuban, like mm-hmm. outspoken person. And I got caught up in a situation where it was almost Stockholm syndrome. Like I felt stuck and I couldn't get out of it. And it was this loop that kept repeating of the makeup breakup. And it was so bad. I mean, it was, thank goodness. I almost feel like I want to use the word escape, because that's the only word that I feel like it pertains to that situation. I felt like I finally escaped being in that horrible loop. So can you talk about that? Like how I think a lot of, and I don't want to just say women, because men get in these situations too, but when you're in it, you feel sort of weak and you're confused and it's just, you can't see your way out of it. And can you talk more about like what steps you could take and sort of what that process looks like?
Sure, sure. Well, one thing that these relationships are, they're trauma bonded relationships, and a trauma bond is established from what we call inconsistent reinforcement. So the narcissist will be kind and loving and wonderful and generous at times, and then they will be abusive or rejecting or degrading or humiliating. And then they'll switch it to another round of the love bombing, being nice and acting like everything's okay. And because of these cycles, that establishes and fortifies a trauma bond, which is a literal, it's a literal addiction that we can get to our abuser. And what that also causes is something called cognitive dissonance. So we are trying to reconcile, is this person the good version that I see, or is this person a bad version of who I see? And we're trying to figure out who they are. And 95% of the time, you know, we want to believe they're the good person. This is hard to reconcile and really understand that we've gotten ourselves involved with one of these people. So we'll tend to go with, you know, I must have misunderstood. We can gaslight ourselves.
Yes.
You know, surely they're a good person. They love me. They say they love me. They act like they love me at times. So maybe it's me. Maybe if I tried harder, maybe if I, you know, did X, Y, Z, which is exactly, by the way, what the narcissist wants to condition and groom you to be consumed with, is what's making them happy.
But do they know that they're doing it?
Oh, I believe so. When you're talking about people with, you know, narcissistic, full-blown NPD or higher, yes, I believe that they do know that they're manipulating this to their advantage. Now, they might not have the terminology for it. But, you know, what's important to remember is that these people do know right from wrong. They know what they're doing is wrong. They know what they're doing is abusive. They just don't care. And they genuinely believe that they're entitled to behave any way they please.
And I think you and I talked about this when we were working together, the covert narcissist. That's for me, like the worst sort of person, because everyone around them thinks that they are the bee's knees and they're super giving and wonderful and kind. And you're thinking, am I crazy? Because I see a different, you know, side of this person. And that's hard to reconcile.
It's very hard to reconcile. And that's part of what goes into the cognitive dissonance that we experience. You know, and that's not just the case with covert narcissists. That can be the case with overt, malignant, all of them. They can be very charming. They can be gregarious. They can be very charming, charismatic. So for the most part, the outside world will see a very good, bright, intelligent, you know, good person. The majority of what we experience is going to be behind closed doors.
Yeah, I think that was the case in my life. And that's why it was really hard to wrap my head around it, which is, and I remember when you and I used to talk and you used to tell me like, no, you look at it this way. And I was always second guessing myself. And I think that's the part that sort of drove me crazy. Cause I'm like, no, maybe Jill's wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, I have to look at myself and do more work on myself. And I think that's when you get caught up in the loop.
Oh, it is. And well, that's part of it. The other factor to always keep in mind is that at the core of narcissistic abuse is psychological abuse. So we are being exposed to very toxic levels of gaslighting. We're being exposed to victim blaming, blame shifting. We're told, you know, that our interpretations of the events are wrong. Things are actually our fault that we originally thought was the narcissist's fault. Problem here is we couldn't imagine manipulating somebody like this that we are supposed to love. We can't imagine literally trying to manipulate their reality so severely that we wear away at their self-esteem and their self-worth.
That's right.
So you've got to keep that in mind. These are sophisticated levels of psychological abuse, and gaslighting is very dangerous to be exposed to it. And in its worst, you know, circumstances, it can make a person believe they're going crazy.
For anyone listening, again, if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know that I'm a pretty open book, but I can tell you that there was a time that I really thought that I was losing my mind because I believed that that person had the best interest, like my best interest at heart. I believed that they were kind. And so I kept thinking, if they're saying these things about me, then they must be right. And then but then things would happen and then they would say it didn't happen. And I'm like, wait, what? Did they not happen? And like for a minute there, I almost started believing them.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard for us to understand that we have really gotten caught up with a human being that just doesn't have a conscience. So, you know,
but pretends that they do, which is the hard part.
Pretends that they do. Yeah. And in fact, covert narcissists can really portray this innocent, victim person that just hasn't ever gotten their fair shake of life. And many times you can feel, really sorry for them and want to help them out. And of course, again, that's the exact cycle they want to get you in.
Right. And I see it so clearly now that I'm out of the woods, now that I'm out of that situation, I see looking back at not just that relationship, but other sort of relationships in my life where there are narcissistic tendencies and where I've let things slide a lot. And now that I have the vocabulary and I have the wherewithal and the knowledge of what's happening, I am, and you always told me, just say okay, because there's no point in going into the back and forth with these people. And if you can deal with completely cutting them out and having no contact, I highly recommend doing that. Any sort of little tiny crack you leave open, in my history and in my situation, I can tell you, somebody who's been through it, and Jill knows I've been through it, and Jill, this is what she does. She coaches people through this. And if you can have no contact, if it's not your co-parenting or something like that, wouldn't you say that is the number one way to heal from all of this?
Oh, absolutely. Beyond a doubt. You're too vulnerable after a relationship like this to have any communication. If you can go no contact, that's always the safest way for anybody to heal from this and get through. If in the situations where they do have children, you want to go as low detached contact as humanly possible and only speak to them in regards to the children. Now, you can even take that a step further. And what I advise a lot of my clients to do who have to co-parent with one of these people is to keep all communications through emails or text messages, or even get an app called Our Family Wizard or Talking Parents. Those apps keep a chronological record of all the communications. So, there can't be any gaslighting. Everybody knows what they've said and what they didn't say, and it keeps a record in case you have to go back to court.
Yeah, a lot of people, when I asked what I should ask you, said, how do you deal with co-parenting and how do you deal with a boss? And so what advice do you have for, other than, because you can't just talk to your boss via text, so you probably get fired.
Sure, yeah.
But how do you deal with narcissists in your life that you can't get rid of in a case like a boss or a mother or a father?
Yeah, well, I would encourage, I have a 20-year-old with one, so I know a lot about this, and he kept me in family court for 15 years. So anybody who is going through this with a child, my heart goes out to you, because these people are incapable of co-parenting. They will counter-parent, and they're going to make everything as difficult as humanly possible, and they don't care about the damage that they do to the children. But in the cases where it's a boss or, even the co-parent, I encourage everyone to look up and implement what's called the Gray Rock method. And that is a method where you just portray yourself as boring as humanly possible. You want to deprive the narcissist of any narcissistic supply that they're getting from you in the form of your reaction, in the form of your frustration, in the form of your fear, intimidation. All of that is still narcissistic supply, which that is attention that makes them feel special. So by going gray rock, you are depriving them of as much narcissistic supply that they can get.
Yes, because you taught me, right? You taught me that even fighting with a narcissist gives them a high.
Yes.
It gives them fuel. So it's the good stuff, the bad stuff, any sort of contact with them makes them feel special. So it's hard to wrap your head around, because you would think, a normal person wouldn't want to be yelled at, but the narcissist sort of fuel, they feed off of that. They love that they've gotten under your skin. Like nothing makes them happier than seeing you react in some way.
Yes, absolutely. My ex used to always say to me, anything for a reaction. And that is it. It's reaction. Whether now they would prefer your praise, adoration, and love, but they'll certainly settle for your fear, your despair, your heartbreak, your fears. You know, that's still your attention that makes them feel special.
A lot of people were asking, and I was reading through these, and it almost like took me back into that time in my life where I felt that way. A lot of people were asking, what's the best way to deal with the narcissist's silent treatment? And I feel such desperation in those questions, because it's almost like when you do cut them off, you sort of secretly are hoping that they reach out again.
Sure. That's the power of a trauma bond.
Yeah.
So, and that's another reason why no contact or low detached contact is so critical, because you will get through that. But many times when we are breaking up with a narcissist, because of the trauma bond, we will be in what is acute withdrawal. So you've got to get through that. And like any drug addiction, you know, you have to not touch it again.
Right.
So any contact can activate that trauma bond, and it's going to set you back.
I'll tell another personal story, because everybody always loves when I, you know, tell, because no one is every, it, this sort of situation is not just for these type of people or those type of people. It doesn't matter. Like I have lots of friends in different parts of their lives, like as young as 20 and as old as 70, were dealing with narcissists. So I remember I had reached out to you once. I'd gone no contact, and I'd gotten this love letter that was so, I thought, like heart-wrenching and beautiful. And you had said like, no, it's like pure manipulation. And you said, whatever you do, don't reply. And I unfortunately replied, and you were right. It came back full force of the whole narcissistic cycle of, you know, building me up just to tear me down again.
Yeah, that's called the Hoover. And what they do, they'll typically always Hoover. I've been Hoovered by a narcissist 30 years since, you know, after our relationship. So they usually always will Hoover at one point or another. But when they Hoover back around to try and swoop you into a relationship with them again, they're going to use tons of love bombing. So they switch the cycles. And a lot of times, you know, because we're trying to break the trauma bond, because we still haven't reconciled all of the cognitive dissonance, when they do Hoover, we can be very, very vulnerable to falling for it. And that is, again, why no contact is really, really critical for those people who can go no contact.
Yeah, 100%. And I also can say, like, dealing and giving yourself enough time to deal with the aftermath of escaping that sort of situation is so critical too, because there's going to be no more difficult of relationship than a healthy one you get into after this one, because you almost are looking always for the shoe to drop, and are you that same person? And it's really tough. So you need to do the work, and whether you work with Jill or your own therapist, it's important to sort of work through all of the aftermath that's left.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I encourage anybody who's had a substantial relationship with one of these people to take, I encourage everybody to take a good 12 months off and really learn about this, understand that, you know, what you've been subjected to, why you've had some of the reactions you've had, how these people operate, so that you can be educated enough where you trust yourself and you never fall victim to one of these people again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there are people who have parents that are narcissists. And that was another question I got a lot. Like, how do you deal with that? And then how do you deal with the guilt? That was a huge question that people came in over and over. The guilt of cutting a family member out of your life.
Well, that's an unfortunate consequence of being exposed to abuse, is toxic levels of guilt. Sometimes we call coming out of narcissistic abuse coming out of the fog, coming out of the fear, obligation, and guilt. But the reality is, whether this is a parent or, you know, an aunt, a sister, a brother, if they are a narcissist, there is just no healthy way to be in communication with them on any meaningful level. it's really about healing and moving on, not entertaining that, because any communications you have with a, you know, person who is in PD or higher is going to end in your abuse. Maybe not that day, but I guarantee you it will end in you being abused and exploited.
Yes. Okay. So the one thing that used to happen to me all the time is there would be the good times, and sometimes I would share something personal, not thinking anything of it. Then fast forward a month, 2 months later, out of nowhere, when I'm at a weak point, that is used as ammunition. You know, it's like they keep a Rolodex of everything that you open up to them about, just to use it as ammunition against you in the future.
Absolutely. And that's one of and they're very, very good at that. Anything, please, everybody who's listening, do not expose personal things about yourself until you really, really know someone. Because a lot of times the narcissist will manipulate us to do that. We'll think we're talking to somebody who's safe. And again, then they're going to use that later on against us.
Yes.
So your boundaries are going to be critical in how to handle people like this. And, take your time. Again, take your time getting to know somebody. Do not share personal, private information about yourself or your family that could be in any way used against you.
Absolutely. And do narcissists project? I mean, well, I know the answer to this, but how do you deal with projection when you're dealing with narcissists? Because I still now deal with that in the people that I can't get out of my life, but I saw that a lot, the constant projection happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's projection, and that's a weird one too. It's very bizarre to watch a narcissist accuse and blame us for the things that they are actually guilty of. A lot of times when we get into a divorce or a custody battle with these people, the narcissist will literally actually try and swap identities with us and almost call us out for everything they are guilty of and take credit for the good things that we have done. So projection is, but it's always there. And the best way that I know how to deal with it is to not take the bait. Don't fight with them. Disengage. Just because they say it doesn't make it true.
Right.
And the more you try and defend yourself, the more in the mud you're going to get with this person, and it's just going to get uglier and uglier. So my best advice is don't take it personal. Just because they say it doesn't make it fact, and disengage and get yourself the hell away from this person.
Yes. Yes. And again, trust me, I know. And I know there were times that I just thought there was no way this was ever going to end. There was no way I was going to ever feel better, that maybe this was my soulmate. Maybe it's not your soulmate.
No, nope, it's not. It can feel like that though. And 100%. Of course the narcissist is grooming us to believe that.
Yes.
But no, it's definitely not your soulmate.
And the only way to get to heal is to really get out of that situation. And it's going to feel like what you said earlier, as like you're a drug addict, like you're actually mm-hmm. withdrawing. And so mm-hmm. it's going to be painful, but trust me, there is a light at the end of that tunnel.
Yes, there is. And you'd be surprised how quickly you can get through that if you maintain no contact, if you maintain, you know, extremely low detached contact, if you are, you know, have to share children with this person. But, you know, typically when the trauma bond is, we're in the acute stages of trying to get out of a trauma bonded relationship, we will feel like it's not a pleasant experience. And it is a feeling of, it can feel like despair, sorrow, like, you know, you can't make it without them, but that those feelings will pass.
Absolutely. So somebody who's dealing with that right now, what are a few exercises they can do to sort of snap out of it?
Well, number one is educate yourself. That's the best defense for reconciling the cognitive dissonance and really understanding what you've been subjected to, is educate yourself thoroughly. The other thing that's going to keep people safe is boundaries, internal boundaries you make with yourself and external boundaries that people in your life have to abide by. Narcissists hate boundaries. They hate them. So if they can't blow through your boundaries relatively quickly, they're going to discard you and move on to somebody else.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, good. Bye.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Joel, please tell people where they can find you.
You can find me on my Instagram or my YouTube channel, The Enlightened Target.
The Enlightened Target. And she, yes, her YouTube videos are fantastic. That's how I found her. Jill, thank you so much for your time. I so appreciate it. And anyone who is dealing with this, reach out to Jill. She is phenomenal.
Oh, well, thank you, Sabrina. It's my pleasure.
I hope you loved that conversation with Jill as much as I did. Please rate and subscribe to my podcast and reach out to me. I love hearing what topics you want me to cover, what guests you want me to have on. Thanks for listening. Until next time.